WHFR, Dearborn. Time now for our public affairs show, the new WHFR Journal.
Hi, I'm the Jumper, the host of Southern Blues at the Midnight. We want to wish you and yours a very special blessed holidays.
Henry Ford Community College presents the Charles Dickens classic, A Christmas Carol, November 13th through December 6th. Performances are Fridays at 7 p.m., Saturdays at 2 p.m. and 7 p.m., and Sunday matinees at 2 p.m. Tickets are only $12 for adults, $10 for students, and $5 for children 12 and under. Please call 313-845-9817 for reservations or further information. All performances will be held in the Adre Auditorium at HFCC's Dearborn Campus. Call 313-845-9817 for A Christmas Carol, November 13th through December 6th.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Local news and alternative views right here from Henry Ford Community College, WHFR.FM, the station making waves. My name is Jay Koronik. Happy to be with you today. It is December the 4th, so in regard to that last public service announcement for Henry Ford Community College, the great production here, as stated by the critic of the Dearborn Press and Guide, Sue Sachita. It's really great, great version of A Christmas Carol presented right here at Adre Auditorium on the main campus of Henry Ford Community College. And this is the last weekend. It's tonight at 7, tomorrow, I think, at 2 and 7, and Sunday at 2 p.m. only. And so if you can get over here, you know, probably there are tickets available, and just come on down. There's a small fee, of course, but, you know, it's going to be a great time. I think I'm going to try to slide over there tonight. They tell me it's only a little more than an hour, but it's a very intense experience, and we hope that you can take part in that. So much better than going to a movie version, you and your family. A Christmas Carol here at Henry Ford Community College Theater, Adre Auditorium on our main campus, 5101 Evergreen Road, just south of Ford Road. That's A Christmas Carol here at HFCC. Last weekend for that presentation, though, been very successful and gotten great reviews so far. With me in the studio today is our WHFR News Director, Dennis Reimars. Dennis, how are the holiday seasons beginning for you?
Awesome, Jay. Good afternoon. How are you?
Okay. We're going to try to find which microphone you're on. Tell me again.
They're wonderful. I had a wonderful holiday.
There we are.
And actually, I'm getting ready for finals. So
uh-huh.
I have It seems like other than this hour I spend with you, I'm distracted thinking about grades.
Certainly so. Just one more week of classes next week. Well, I think it goes to a week from Monday is technically the last official class, and then the final exams will be over by Saturday the 19th for anybody who has a Saturday class, a Saturday exam. So things are getting busy here, and the campus will be closing down for a semester break, also known to those non-pagans as a Christmas break, somewhere around the 22nd or 23rd. Online registration for next semester is still possible if you've already been admitted. And I don't believe it, if you haven't come to Henry Ford Community College before, you can be admitted while the college is closed. And there may be a way to do that. We'll give you more information. Also on the 25th, there will not be a journal show. I know that's going to just ruin your holidays, but we're going to have some very special holiday programming from WHFR featured on all day Christmas Eve day and all day Christmas day, all day and all evening, all pre-recorded by yours truly and our WHFR volunteer staff. Are you in one of those shows yet, Dennis?
At least one.
Oh, at least one. Yes, I thought I saw you around when we were doing that this week. So a lot of very alternative Christmas and holiday seasonal music and comments from the staff about all kinds of things that are related to the winter season and how we really should celebrate and be with friends, family, love and peace and all that. Let's give it a try for a few days anyway. That's what I say. Well, we're going to take a look now at the local news from the Dearborn Papers, Dearborn Press and Guide. The so-called top of the page, first page story from last Wednesday, December 2nd, sort of a recap. I think we knew this was happening, but the city of Dearborn wants to include Burton Katzman's related companies. They're expanding the suit to all the different varieties of corporations that are connected to Burton Katzman, because now they think that some of these other corporations had a finger in the pie, that is, in the finger, you know, involvement in this development, and therefore are legally responsible too. And so, and this is, I guess, the story, I would say the bottom line. I'm going to read a little bit of it to you. But the bottom line here is not that the city was, City of Dearborn was going to amend the original complaint, because I think we heard that a few weeks or a month or so ago. But this is the complexity of business. It's hard to track these people down. Almost sounds like one of these crime dramas where they're trying to track down a criminal and they've got one company after another, whether they're called shell companies or whether they're, somehow related, legally. It just sort of diffuses, who to blame if there is a problem. And, here's the story, and just give you sort of the background. And this is the world of business, folks. So if you want to be a business major, and even if you want to do things legally, I guess you're going to incorporate all over the place. Every separate activity is a separate business, as if that could be some protection against lawsuit. I really think if there's all these businesses, and if your lawyers aren't smart enough to find all the related companies, it could mean that you don't get, all the responsibility. If you win your point with the court, you don't get all the people who are really responsible to pay the fine if it comes down to that, or serve time in jail if it comes down to that, I guess. So here it is anyway. Here's the story from the Press and Guide, December 2nd. After ruling in Dearborn's favor last month, a Wayne County Circuit Court judge will hear arguments Friday. That's today. Yep. They meet on Fridays, the courts in Wayne County. Well, just a joke because, our senators and representatives in Lansing, they have Fridays off. Except in vital emergencies, but even when there's a budget crisis happens every year, of course, it's very rare that they are ever actually doing work on Fridays.
Well, you and I know, Jay, that creating a law isn't nearly as difficult as enforcing it, though. And I think that's why the courts are open Friday. Okay, and, thank you for and also my sarcasm.
There's also quite a backlog of criminal and civil cases, and they probably would be good if we could afford to pay them to be active on Saturdays too, but that's not traditionally a day for the courts to be in session. But,
no.
There's a lot of cases that they have to oversee and move along. And of course, we don't want that to happen too quick, sort of like going into your doctor, and he says, "How you doing?" And you say, "Well, doc, I think I have, yeah, I'll just take these pills and see my nurse." You know, thanks, doc. Thanks for all that in-depth analysis of my problem here. But you know, the more people they technically see, even in passing in the halls, I think sometimes the more they can bill for an office appointment. It's amazing to me how much the nurses actually do in all those things, because they find out, well, what's wrong with you? They find that out for 10 minutes before you see the doctor, and then they're the ones that give you a shot or take the blood or whatever afterwards. So it's, you see the doctors in passing, and you know, and you figure out the doctor's the one that's got the much more intense medical knowledge as well as experience. But oh well. Anyway, so the city of Dearborn Corporation Counsel Deb Walling, she says, "We're trying to pierce the corporate veil, V-E-I-L. And to do that, apparently the city will ask Judge Michael Sapala to add Burton Katzman Manager, LLC, which is sort of like an incorporated thing. Do you know, Dennis, what LLC stands for?
Limited Liability Corporation.
Oh, well, that says it all, doesn't it?
It does. It basically serves
limits their liability.
Yeah. Well, it serves as like a legitimate or a conventional incorporated company,
right,
without... actually, it's more advantageous tax reasons.
Yeah. Okay. And then there's
but so
also
you know, Burton Katzman Manager has no assets, has no revenue, has no income. It truly is a shell company.
Wow.
Okay. And that gets interesting as the article goes along. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Burton, but just a list of the other people that are being added. All these little add-on tangential or shell companies. Burton Share Management Company, which is B/K/G Investors. Comma LLC, so they're another shell company, perhaps limited liability company. And then there's two people here, Stephen Bentley and Lawrence Goss, are also defendants, and they somehow must be either managers or related to the Burton Katzman situation in Dearborn. So that's the documents that were obtained by the Press and Guide to look in the details of what the city has been trying to do here. And, of course, we're talking about the West Dearborn development situation and how basically Burton Katzman and all these other companies haven't fulfilled their promise to build everything that they said they would. And, therefore, the city is suing them for somewhere, I thought it was around $17 million, and now somewhere else I read it might be $21
million. Mm-hmm. More than 21.2.
Yeah, and the judge did tell them last month, at least the original defendants, it said, you got to complete your promise.
Yeah.
And, of course, as I said, they can appeal that. They can, you know, go to the Supreme Court of the United States maybe if they want to, if they're able to. Supreme Court doesn't hear everything. Right. Sometimes they say, no, we don't want to, you know, we like the ruling from the lower courts. Just keep it there. We're not going to hear it. But it could take years before that goes on. But since it was so clear that they've got to fulfill their promise and now all of their shell companies are going to be tied in, I'm sure the city is hoping for an out-of-court settlement so they can use that money. However, at this point, in a difficult business situation, I don't really know if we need that hotel between those twin towers. We don't need the twin parking towers either, but I don't know why a hotel would be good. Until we get, of course, the new train station
right. In
West Dearborn, which could be 7 to 10 years away, high-speed rail and so on, not going to happen quickly. They still have to raise the money for that. But so I'm sure the city is, if I was the city, I'd be hoping for the money as soon as possible. But we'll have to wait and see where that's going to go.
Jay, this started, if I'm not mistaken, they entered into this agreement in 2006. Does that sound right? I think it was 2006 where this first all kind of unfolded, where they started the original contract.
The suit?
No, not the suit.
Oh.
I thought that the actual agreement...
oh, no, because...
Develop a complaint. Oh, I'm sorry, you're right. The suit was filed in 2006.
Yeah, I think so. Well, because the building has been going on for years.
I think
at least 2004 or 5.
You're absolutely right.
And, well, I don't know if I'm absolutely right.
No, it says it right here.
Oh, it says right there. Okay, thanks.
So you
see, folks, how important it is to read the whole article?
Yeah, thanks. I mean, thanks, Jay.
Thank you, Dennis.
I needed help with the big words.
No.
But no, seriously, what I'm thinking of is just how different... At that point, whenever, let's say 4 or 5 years ago when this is all started in the works, how different the outlook was on, you know, the economy, on the future plans for Dearborn. We had different people in place. Things change, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Right, as well as the economy, obviously. But
the biggest single change.
You know, the Burton Katzman argument, well, it was hard to borrow money, and the city has already proved, we mentioned last week in testimony, that the city has proven they didn't even try to raise the money.
They didn't even try.
And we're talking about way before the crisis. Mm-hmm. I guess they were hoping that, well, in the current environment, the judge will think that was why they couldn't get money. But in fact, they lied to the judge about even trying to get money. They didn't even try to borrow more to complete the project way before the big-time crisis happened. Okay, there was a little business slowdown. Mm-hmm. Michigan has been having that slowdown even before the automotive crisis and so on. You know, there was that economic slowdown for the last, I mean, maybe 6 to 8 years even, going back that far. But they didn't even try. And at this point, I don't think we'd even need that hotel. But they promised. They clearly promised to do it. And because they didn't even try, for gosh sakes, they are so liable, I think.
The judge thought that, too.
Honestly, do you think the city,
if 7 years down the road when there is a high-speed train, do you think that should they decide to develop a hotel, maybe they'll go with a different developer? I would think.
And maybe the location will be closer to the train station
exactly.
or something. But,
maybe this isn't the best. Yeah. This really is a blessing in disguise. Right. But I'm always glass half full. Go ahead.
We don't have any update on the Dearborn Public School situation other than, in fact, we did try. I want to mention that we did try to get in touch with the Senate Majority Leader. Again, Republicans in the Michigan Senate in Lansing are in the majority. And so they can either let pass or not any of the bills passed by the House if they happen to agree on the same wording, the same sort of situation bicameral government in Washington, D.C. People remember your civics lessons, I'm sure, from high school. So it has to be, the wording has to be exactly the same. But at this point, we know that bills have passed the House, supported by House Majority Leader Andy Dillon, who we spoke to 2 weeks ago on the show. Thank you for calling in, Mr. Dillon, being responsible to your home-based communities, Dearborn Heights, part of this area, of course. And we contacted Senator Bishop's office several times, multiple times, and they even their PR rep was unavailable and did not get back to us about a follow-up to the situation now that it's been kicked to the Senate. Mm-hmm. The Senate Majority Leader, just so you folks know, and I'm not casting aspersions at the Republican Party, well, I guess I am indirectly, they don't want to talk to us. They don't want to be available. Not even their PR rep, which I'd rather talk to the man himself, Mr. Senator Bishop. What's his first name? Mike.
Michael, yes.
I think it's Mike Bishop, yeah. But if any Republicans are listening, we'd really appreciate to have the real word, the follow-up on what's going to happen in the Senate. We know the education cuts have already happened, and Dearborn has had to indicate there's going to be a lot of layoffs, there's going to be a lot of cutbacks. Great statement, partial statement from Superintendent Brian Wilson in Dearborn for Dearborn Public Schools in the Press and Guide this week on the editorial page. If you are a Dearborn resident, you did get his longer sort of newspaper about what's happening in the Dearborn Public Schools. And I actually read that, although I didn't bring it with me today. Sorry, folks. A lot of stories in there. The Dearborn Public Schools are trying a lot of stuff. They're doing a lot of things with kids. We often don't hear about that, and especially we don't have kids in the schools anymore. And that was an expanded edition from what I remember in the past. And good for them in getting the word out. They're trying to do stuff despite the situation. But Brian Winston, the superintendent, has his complete statement in that newspaper. And this is, you know, either partial or maybe it is the whole statement. It's continuing on another page here. And you should read it if you're a resident of Dearborn and see where he's coming from. It's a tough, tough situation, but he's not just trying to pass the buck here. He's trying to do the right thing, I think, for the Dearborn Public Schools. We hope to have an interview with him when things settle down in the new year, as soon as possible in January.
You're looking at the opinion article, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was reading the article, the unions and the DPS officials at odds over cut strategies by Katie Hetrick, and she's a Press and Guide newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting about this is they are at odds that the Dearborn Federation of Teachers, said that they had proposed certain things that would be cost-cutting measures that were, were just rejected out of hand. At the same time, some of these ideas are interesting. I don't know if you saw them. One of the ideas, raising $100,000 by allowing advertising on school buses. That was opposed by the superintendent and the administrators. Something that I never even thought of, something maybe I even thought that because we are just saturated with advertising that had already happened. I just think something like that is a very interesting and creative way to raise money. And if done properly, would you agree harmless? Getting advertising on buses? You know what I mean? I mean, it's not...
Yeah, I don't want to indoctrinate our kids with... I'm suspicious of suggestions to advertise within the schools for private profit reasons, you know, to condition the kids one way or the other, because some people even suggested that. And I think that it should be a commercial free zone in the schools. The buses, the kids ride inside. Okay, they see it when the buses come, but you know, and you're right, done in the appropriate ways. I mean, should the school system be endorsing, you know, some local establishments, let's say, that sell alcoholic beverages, for example,
right,
or plastic surgery, or, you know, because the kids might say, well, the schools allows that advertising, so they must be in favor of it. And even the parents might make that connection.
Very, very good point.
You have to be very selective about that. I know it was brought up because we have a very large distribution of our class schedule, Henry Ford Community College. And many colleges that believe in getting all the print versions out as widely as possible, they take ads. Some even take ads in their calendar or on their website.
Sure.
A calendar catalog or on their college website. And we have not done that here. Maybe because we feel we don't have to yet. We're not desperate yet. But there's always the question, even with WHFR, when we endorse things, when we take underwriters over the air, we can't do commercials, we are concerned that they're setting the right image in the community and for our listeners because, well, we're a non-commercial enterprise and we don't really want to support a wide variety of things that might be okay, fine for individual choice, but not to recommend blatantly for everybody to be concerned. So there's always an image issue, and I think as long as you can resist that, the better. But for me, advertising on the sides of buses or laying off a couple more teachers, easy call there.
That's a no-brainer.
Yeah, with certain criteria about the kind of advertising. But no, I would say, and that's not going to save more than one job or two jobs.
Right.
But yeah, they should go ahead with that. It is desperate, I think, for them to consider doing commercial advertising in a variety of ways or allowing that to happen.
And you know, and I think that that's it. It's so desperate right now that that one really jumped out at me because maybe because we are, everything really is ad space, if you think about it, in our society. And if done right at all, because I never thought about that. Anything that is on a bus will seem as if it's being endorsed by the schools. You're exactly right.
Here's where public can get involved on page 12A of the Press and Guide from December 2nd. In an effort to provide the community with more information on current school funding and the budget situation, the Dearborn Public Schools has asked the Parent Teacher Student Association, that's PTSA, and we talked to their president here on this show just 2 weeks ago, or was it last week?
Two
weeks ago, right.
Same show as Mr. Dillon.
Right. And in any event, great group. So they're going to have meetings scheduled for the public, and I know it's holiday season, and it's going to get busy. It looks like one of them took place last night. Always hate that, but the paper comes out on Wednesday, folks. If you actually subscribe and you put it aside to the weekend, the odds are you've missed a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
That happened in the community on Thursday and Friday. In some cases, even Wednesday night. I hate that they don't give more information a week in advance for the people that don't read the weekly paper until, say, Saturday or Sunday, because they miss a whole bunch of stuff. But one took place last night, and then coming up next, December 7th, okay, I'm thinking ahead, today's the 4th, that's Monday.
Monday, right.
1 to 3 in the boardroom of the administration building on Audette.
That's the Tenike.
That's the Tenike School, right, in Dearborn. So that's 1 to 3 p.m. That's a daytime thing, okay? And for you nighttime folks, 7 to 9 p.m. on December 15th. So that's a Tuesday night. That's in Fortson High School Auditorium. That's the east side of town. right? Fordson is the east side high school, yes. Okay. So 7, 9 p.m. over there. And make your input. Give your input about maybe some of these choices and whether you want to save some teacher jobs or whether you just want to save certain programs. It's a chance to get your voice and your ideas heard if you're not already doing that email thing to the schools and to Superintendent Winston, perhaps. The meeting will cover a brief review of school funding in Michigan, which is a disaster, recap the current budget year and the budget reduction plan, look ahead to next year, and provide time for questions, comments, suggestions. Even if you can't do much now, making input in person, really your civic duty, and certainly if you have kids in the schools, there's no question that you should go to one of these meetings. So the two coming up, December 7th, this coming Monday, 1 to 3 p.m. in the Tenike Administration Building, 18700 Audette. That's West Dearborn area. East Dearborn area, 7 to 9 p.m. December 15th in the big auditorium at Fordson High School on the east side of town. That's Ford Road, east side. Okay? So, and the meetings will also be shown on the district's cable channel. I guess that's going to be live, too. And stream live also on the district's website. For good for them. And also those unable to attend can take part through a special email address and chat feature during the event. So maybe if you had a question and you're at home watching, you can type in your question, and maybe, it doesn't say for certain, but maybe it can actually be responded to live even though you're not in attendance. So isn't technology wonderful? I think so. We're not going to go over Brian Winston's comments. It's a very detailed thing. We don't have time in this show for that. We're approaching the halfway point here. What I'd like to do is feature, as we are wont to do many times, Jim Hightower spot commentary. And it sort of has to do with the healthcare situation in Washington, D.C., which is not finalized yet. And it's entitled Using Lawmakers as Ventriloquist Dummies. Always a controversial way that he puts things. So take a listen now to Jim Hightower and his point of view about what's happening in Washington, D.C. on the healthcare issue. WHFR.FM, the station making waves. And we'll be back with more of the WHFR Journal right after that.
After the landmark health insurance reform bill passed in November, several Congress critters set forth their views about the legislation in statements inserted into the congressional record. For example, Representative Michael Conaway of Texas made this comment: "I do believe the sections relating to the creation of a market for biosimilar products is one area of the bill that strikes the appropriate balance." Representative Lynn Jenkins of Kansas added her views: "I do believe the sections relating to the creation of a market for biosimilar products is one area of the bill that strikes the appropriate balance." Also, Representative Lee Terry of Nebraska put in his 2 cents worth, declaring, "I do believe the sections relating to the creation of a market for biosimilar products is one area of the bill that strikes the appropriate balance." I don't know what biosimilar products are, but the comments by these three Republicans are not just similar, they are identical. Do all Republican lawmakers think exactly alike, or is something else going on here? Something else. All three were parroting words written and handed to them by lobbyists for Genentech, a huge Swiss-owned biotech corporation. Genentech just happens to have a lot of money riding on restricting this biosimilar market, so it was eager to have the official record on this provision of the health bill reflect its special interest viewpoint. Genentech lobbyists did not stop with just the three Republicans. At least 22 Republican House members and 20 Democrats were willing to be spoon-fed Genentech's views, all of them regurgitating language that the lobbyists wrote. Ask about the ethics of using lawmakers as ventriloquist dummies? One lobbyist said, "This happens all the time. There's nothing nefarious about it." This is Jim Hightower saying, "Wow, having it happen once is alarming. Having it happen all the time is appalling and nefarious."
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
This is Kristen, the production manager at WHFR.FM 89.3. We are the station making waves all throughout your holiday season. I would like to extend my warmest wishes to you and your family. Have a safe and happy holiday.
Thank you very much. That's Kristen, our production manager. Got her own comments recorded there. Why? Because she's got the microphone most of the time, and she can do it. No, we wanted everybody to share. We're playing all of our comments from our staff. People, I think we got over 35 people that actually had the time to record their own specific season's greetings and best wishes to you. And so you're going to be hearing those from now until, I guess, Christmas anyway. So don't hold it against us. So hope you enjoyed the Jim Hightower commentary, and we're going to continue now with the new WHFR Journal. And we have some guests in the studio. I'm just going to wave to them now. Hi. Hi. I think they can hear my voice, right? It's a Girl Scout troop, or it's Divine Child. It's Divine Child, right? Elementary. Hi. Have a good time today. And our former promotions person, Bill Wright, is going to record some season's greetings from them in our Studio B right now. So welcome to our
home.
It is.
For an hour anyway, right?
Actually, I sometimes have spent more time here in a day than I do at my other home. Yes, we had a couple of interesting opinions that are buried in the papers this week. And, you know, Michigan is famous across the whole United States for several unfortunate things. I bet there's some good things, too. But we're not the auto capital anymore.
Yeah, give me a minute, right?
So I can't think of what those are offhand. I know where that we have a population that has that is more obese than any other population in the states, on average, more overweight. Not saying fat isn't fun, there are some health problems related to being more than the so-called average weight. We have more unemployment than any other state in the United States. We have more foreclosures, at least in the Detroit area, than any other metro area in the United States, foreclosures on home mortgages.
Homelessness is an issue.
We are the number one homeless city, a larger homeless population in percentage than any other city in the United States. And Detroit has also got the third largest number of homeless, right after New York and Los Angeles.
Regardless of the size of the states.
Which is much, much bigger populations. And, of course, they would have more homeless. But they have a smaller percent of homeless than we do. So because we're on both lists, you know, in the top 10, actually number 3, in the actual number of people that are homeless, as best we can count them. Hey, there's another one on the street corner. Hey, count that one. And there's one under the bridge. I mean, it must be hard to count the homeless. That's really a tough job. I don't know if people are constantly patrolling or the Detroit police help with.
I think so.
And I don't know. It's really.
Well, it's how many people are served at shelters. I mean, there's I won't say it.
Right.
It's comprehensive.
We could correlate it. Sure. And they try to use the same criteria across all these cities. And what else? The state of Michigan, we have the largest percent of our population incarcerated.
Really?
Yes, in jail. That's been the case for years, is that a higher percentage of our population are in our Michigan jails than any other state in the U.S.
Now, doesn't that make the homeless number that much scarier? And what I mean by that is there may be a correlation with incarceration and homelessness. There's very often people do things out of desperation, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And that being the case, you wonder how the numbers would be otherwise.
Well, there's certain questions raised about our judicial system,
right,
and the way we punish people, or the way we maybe doing a poor job of rehabilitating people, because obviously, and this is pretty much true around the U.S., people that go to jail once are quite likely to come back. They love it. You know, they.
Yeah, the return, the percentage is very high.
Recidivism, where they keep returning, unfortunately. They keep committing crimes. So it's the bad environment. It's unfortunate. Lack of jobs, too.
Mm-hmm.
If people wanted a job, it's even harder to get one if you're a felon, if you've already committed a crime. Some places you just wouldn't be considered at all. And so it really narrows your job possibilities. But then there's not even that many jobs available for anybody, whether
right.
you came out of jail or not. And so the highest high school dropout rate, in other words, the smallest percent of people graduating from high school For example, in Detroit. In Detroit, I think it's only about 20% who start as freshmen actually graduate.
Wow.
And, of course, the Detroit Public Schools dispute that. There's various ways to read the numbers.
Right.
But we have one of the highest in the country, and I think the highest in Detroit, of people who start high school and don't finish. And then, of course, my educated liberal elitist or libertarian elitist self has to say, where are these people? Well, I bet they're either in jail or they're homeless. You
right.
know, I mean, what choices are there? Maybe they left.
They went
somewhere else, and that's why they didn't finish high school. They got the heck out of Dodge.
And sometimes exactly. And those things all tie into almost a transient nature, too.
But here we go. Wayne County roads are named the worst in the state. Detroit, Dearborn, and Dearborn Heights, among others, are ranked the worst municipalities. And here's the story. Coming out of Lansing, they don't say who in Lansing, but Michigan.gov. Anyway, Wayne County has the worst roads in all of Michigan, a whopping 1,841 miles of roads in poor condition, while Detroit is first out of nearly 1,800 municipalities in all of Michigan, with 586 miles in poor condition. Now, obviously, they got a lot of roads to start with, so even if it's the same percent as the roads in Ishpeming, somewhere in the UP.
Excellent cheese out of Ishpeming.
You really? Okay.
Well, I don't know. I just remember Ishpeming cheese.
Okay. Anyway, so we don't know about that, but certainly there's a lot of roads in Detroit, a lot of roads in Wayne County, just in terms of numbers, and they have the most number of miles in poor condition. And that's according to the Michigan Asset Management Council's annual report released in November by the Michigan Infrastructure and Transportation Association, a group that represents mostly road builders. It's not a state group. It's a lobbyist group. And you know why they total these things up. They want some jobs.
Yeah, they want
some contracts.
Revenue. Sure, sure.
So if people in these cities don't know how many poor roads they have, the road builders will
they'll be happy to
gladly tell you.
Absolutely.
You know, you need to hire us to help you with 586 miles of roads. Although that sort of says, you know, like why the city or the state, they should be on top of that, and they should know some of this information, don't they? Or do they depend on the road builder contractors to tell them? Well, anyway, just thought you ought to know that that's... We're number one again, folks.
Well, and they did specifically point out Dearborn in that article?
Yeah.
You know, what's interesting is on the way here from home, I go past an area that had been blocked for quite a while, most of the summer, and that's over Michigan Avenue and Evergreen by Fairlane Mall.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's done, and everything's better. And I didn't know that they'd have it done in time. All of a sudden, just a Friday morning, literally, about maybe 3-4 weeks ago, it was done. And they did an excellent job, as they did on our parking lot.
Right, which is that's a private issue here,
of course,
but private contractors. But
yeah,
that thing on Michigan Avenue at Greenfield, that seemed to take 3 months, and most of the time didn't see any action. I don't know what was going on there, but there was a bridge repair, I guess, was part of it, and entrance and exit ramps from Southfield were part of it. And, of course, you have to keep the traffic flow going, which means those projects take longer because they have to build those, like, temporary roads that squirrel around the traffic while they've closed some of the other major roads. So it's a big deal. But I don't think we have any current construction holding up anything in Dearborn right now.
I can't think of any.
And it was the intention, you know, to be finished by the cold weather time when they can't do roads anyway very easily. And, of course, don't want to hold back the shoppers from getting to the town center there.
It only took you 37 minutes to get to that, Jay. That was wonderful.
Thanks.
Beautiful restraint.
In the business section, Section C of the Press and Guide this week, very disturbing headline here, I got my attention as a senior citizen, although not officially. I'm not 65 yet, folks. Soon enough, I guess. But tax break for seniors is draining the state. Now, that's in quotes. Two stories from the Associated Press, and you would think, although I understand that the headline for stories is often done by the local newspapers, as a former newspaper editor himself, Dennis, the people that write the stories aren't usually the ones, maybe they can suggest.
They definitely suggest.
A story title. But I know a couple times the headlines, the story title, is not really well related to the story itself because it was done by an editor who maybe, well, wanted to make it more sensational or maybe hadn't closely read the story all the way through, which is, you know, a common problem if the story comes in at the last minute. So let's first go to what should be more objective, the Associated Press. The number one wire service, as they're called, and they don't use wires really anymore for much, but, you know, supposedly a really responsible press organization, not associated with any network or anything like that, but primary source of information for newspapers and even the networks, the TV and cable news networks. And they say, this is a look at Michigan's senior tax breaks. You didn't know this, or you're not a senior, Michigan exempts all Social Security and public pension benefits from income taxes. Not the same in other states. Okay, I get a pension because I did officially retire from Henry Ford Community College, so that's a public teacher pension out of Lansing. But I work 40 years for it. Keep your fingers off it, please. If I move to certain other states in the United States, and I got those checks coming to me there, if I was a legal resident of certain other states, and I won't mention who they are, they would tax me on that money. So it doesn't happen everywhere that this money is not taxed. The same thing with Social Security. Even if I moved to another country other than the United States, my Social Security might be taxed by those countries or not. Certain countries like, well, I'll just mention a few exciting ones. Panama, they don't tax any income you have. Okay. Wow. Okay, but Michigan doesn't either. Okay. Number two, taxpayers age 65 or older in Michigan also get to deduct up to $10,000 or so on a single return or $20,000 on a joint return in interest, dividends, and capital gains. So that's kind of fun if you had money in the bank and you're 65 or older. And I haven't gotten there yet, but I won't have to pay any money. The capital gains is where you sold, let's say you bought stock in a company, and then you sold it, and you made a profit compared to what you bought it for. That's capital gain, folks. And so if you're 65 or older, you don't pay any money. Now, maybe that's only a couple $100, maybe it's a couple $1,000. But once you're 65 in Michigan, you don't pay any money on interest, dividends, and capital gains. Also, in Michigan, those 65 and older get double the $2,300 annual tax exemption that other taxpayers get. Just for being a person, you get an exemption. But 65 or older, you get double the exemption or $4,600. Boy, I can hardly wait to become 65. I want to start aging a little faster here. Seniors can claim a larger proportion of their property taxes, too, in figuring their homestead property tax credit on their income taxes. The average credit for seniors is more than 1.5 times larger than the average credit for other filers. Also, finally here, according to the AP, the home heating credit allows low-income seniors. And that doesn't qualify, you know, I guess I don't qualify because I get that pension from a teacher pension. So I'm sure I'm not low income. So I don't know how low is low, but you can maybe claim extra exemptions, which gives you more available credit too if your income is quite low as a senior. So Michigan does that for us. And isn't that nice? That's one of the reasons I have researched this, folks, since I planned on retiring for a couple of years. And I've been looking into this, actually, because of a health scare about 4 years ago. Serious setback. A pre-existing condition is now on my record, I'm afraid. You know, because of all these things I mentioned, I want to stay in Michigan. And it's good because I still pay taxes and I buy stuff here. And so in a way, these are incentives to keep our seniors in Michigan. Think about it that way. Dennis, I don't know. How do you feel about all those tax breaks? You're nowhere near being a senior citizen.
No,
you think it's unfair?
No, I do not think it's unfair. I know many people that do qualify. Mm-hmm. And in addition to that, isn't there a large percent of our population in general that will be senior citizens in a short period of time. And I'm not saying it'll be more than the people under 65, but it'll just, I think, historically, one of the largest percentages.
It's true all around the U.S. that the senior population is rapidly becoming a much larger percentage. In Dearborn, those over 50, and I don't know about over 60 or 65, but a majority of our population in Dearborn is already over 50.
Right.
And I don't know how many young kids are going to move into Dearborn in the future or stay here. We have that problem with young people moving out, usually. Usually they move out. They go to college, and after that, they don't come back. Of course, where are the jobs? How can they come back to a job?
Right.
If there's no jobs, they can't come back, even if they'd love to, even if they want to stay in this area. And there's nothing wrong with the area, per se, except you got to have a job, okay? But certainly the tax credits for seniors are significant enough that you may not want to move to another state. Now, some other states and or other countries, as I said, like Panama, have wonderful tax-free and tax credit treatments for retirees or even just U.S. citizens in general, even if you're not retired. There's some other countries in the world that better health care, like France and so on. Once you move to France, you qualify for their health care. And it's the best in the world, folks. Even though you pay a little bit, it's much less than you pay in the U.S. for Medicare, even. So, well, let's go to the story. I'm still trying to find out who said that these tax breaks are draining the state as if it's the single most important cost that's causing our budget crisis. I mean, that's the implication I get here. Now, who wrote this? A Kathy Barks Hoffman.
25.
She's barking out loud. And maybe she's mad because she's a young person and out, and she's blaming. And about, did she pick this title? Or did somebody at the Press and Guide pick the title? I mean, it's actually a very controversial title. Okay, here's her story, just briefly feature a little bit of it. Every time a Michigan resident begins collecting a pension or turns 65, the nation's most generous tax breaks for seniors kick in. Okay, well, I didn't know that. This is the most generous for seniors, this state of Michigan, for retired people of any state in the U.S. That's what she says. I don't know if that's just teachers or anybody. Oh, and I didn't think that was true. I read these senior retirement things and was a member of AARP for a number of years. I didn't think Michigan was the number one state in terms of tax breaks for seniors.
I didn't either.
I don't know if that's really true, Kathy.
Because wouldn't you, you would think that, well, other than the fact that we don't have warm weather year-round, you would think that we would have far more seniors.
Well, she's generalizing. Later in the story, she says... And this is based on, she's quoting the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities, okay, in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
But she says Michigan's benefits, or quoting this other group, are twice as generous as those of second place Kentucky.
Wow.
And Kentucky was never even on my list to retire to because these other magazines I've been reading for 4 or 5 years, I never read this, so I don't know who these people are. Maybe the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities he's got it wrong. I mean, I don't know. Okay, and the study was based in 2006, by the way, too, from this group. But nonetheless, Georgia, South Carolina, and Hawaii round out the top five.
Huh.
Hawaii, again, I didn't know they were that generous to retirees. Now, South Carolina, I've heard about before. I've heard about Georgia. But the usual Southwest Sunbelt states of Arizona, Texas, which a lot of people have retired to, even Florida. Are not on this list, or at least they're not in the top five. Although, just because they're the top in this tax break category, there's a question of property taxes.
Sure.
Michigan has pretty low property taxes compared to some other states. But there are some states that even have... like very, very much less property taxes. And so it's whatever is important to people. Some people say, oh, I don't want to pay a sales tax, a large sales tax. Certain cities like Chicago or New York City, oh my gosh, there's a city sales tax, there's a state sales tax. And so what you buy in those locations, if you live in those locations, you buy stuff there, are also high. So you have to look at the overall picture, folks, that Michigan is, I'm sorry to say, not the cheapest state overall for seniors to live in. But in terms of tax breaks coming from our government, it's pretty good, apparently.
Well, and I mean, it offsets some
better
of
than second place, almost twice as good as second place Kentucky.
But there are drawbacks to Michigan right now, and mm-hmm. the weather is obviously a real big part of the decision. So I think that the higher tax breaks would offset some of the negatives. And frankly, I want as many people here as possible of all ages, you know?
Yeah,
so absolutely. I think maybe that's why I'm in favor of these and they don't bother me at all.
I know if I wanted to relocate somewhere, wow, you know, property sales costs are way low in Michigan. I mean, you know, the price to buy property is way down because of the economic situation. But some other states like Texas, their home values keep going up. Especially in the Austin area, and I love Austin, Texas. I visit there a couple times a year.
Austin's booming right now, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, and therefore home prices are holding and growing bigger. In Michigan, they're still declining. My daughter, who is trying to sell her house, anybody need a home in Dearborn around the Oakwood area? I know there's a house up for sale starting today. Last year and this year, market value of houses around her property, which is near Oakwood Hospital, they dropped 17%. The selling price of homes on average in Dearborn, in this area around Oakwood, which is not a bad area, and technically it's east side of town, I guess, Oakwood Hospital. No, it's west. Just west. It's just a little bit west of Southfield Expressway there, Oakwood Hospital, off Oakwood. 17% decline in prices. So you can't say there aren't bargains out there. So a senior looking to relocate to Michigan would find really nice big homes for really, really good prices. Whether you go to Traverse City or stay in the Detroit Dearborn area, you can get houses that would cost, I think the home I live in Dearborn would be three times the cost in terms of its amenities in Austin, for example. Three times. So I'm thinking of finding a really big trailer and getting it, you know, getting that house leveraged over, and it's going to take up an 8-lane expressway. But by God, I'm going to drive it down there. And
what would that land in Austin cost?
Yeah, well, more than here,
right?
Certainly more than here. So just wanted to put a caveat there, let the reader beware on this tax break for seniors of draining states, because you can be sure some conservative think tank or Republicans, like maybe Senator Mike Bishop, will get hold of this and want to start chopping away at senior tax advantages. And I don't think they should do that. But we are number one in that criteria, so it certainly puts it up as a target for budget cost cutters.
Well, based on what they've done with the schools, I don't think that being number one is the criteria, mm-hmm. wherever they can get the money. But no, I think you said yourself that's the first time you saw a lot of these figures.
Yeah.
And I do wonder about their the 100% accuracy.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we just wanted to bring that to your attention. We've got about 9 minutes to go on the new WHFR Journal, WHFR.fm, station making waves. And by all means, you know, we hope you tune in for the next 2 weeks. We will still be here. Dennis and myself and other special guests, and maybe even Senator Mike Bishop come down from his tower in Lansing and give us a call and tell us what's happening. And because there are some bills, as I said, that passed the House that could reestablish some money, at least for Dearborn schools, at least temporarily this year, that would take the pain away, assuage the pain, as they say in fancy places, for our students and our educational situation here. So what has Gino Polidori been doing? Well, he voted for a couple of these bills in the House, and he voted for a couple others, and he sent a little newsletter flyer, as he does a couple times a year, because it's free for him to do it. The state pays for it, as it does for every legislator, telling us what he's been doing. And he's been doing a lot of stuff. The problem is, if you read closely, he helped pass these things and or introduce some of these things in the House of Representatives. They haven't passed the Senate. They haven't become laws. He would have said that, folks, if it did happen, and it didn't happen. He wants to hold drug companies accountable. If they do bad things, we should be able to sue them. Do you know Michigan is one of the only states in the U.S. you can't sue a big drug company when their products have harmed or killed you? Of course, if they killed you, you can't sue anyway.
Right.
Although maybe your relatives could. Okay. Well, so that only passed the House. So what's happening, Mike Bishop, in the Senate? Why the heck can't you agree to hold big drug companies accountable if they got a drug that harms or kills somebody, and it can be proven in a court of law by a suit? Let them be sued. Shouldn't they be held accountable? Most states do hold them accountable, not Michigan. Ooh, that might hurt the profits of drug companies that are based in Michigan. Ooh. Yeah, where's that trickle down when we need it? Come on, give us a break here. I'm sorry. You know, the opinions that we've expressed this hour, and may still have a few more coming in the last couple of minutes, are those only of Dennis and myself and some of the people in the papers here, not necessarily anyone at Henry Ford Community College. Please don't blame them. You know, they allow us to spout off here. But what do you think, too? If we have opinions, it's because we want to challenge you to think and form your own opinions. Don't believe something because Dennis says so.
Please, believe something that Dennis says.
Yeah, or myself, even. You know, my God, Jay said it, so it must be true. No.
Do your research, please.
Right.
Please.
Yeah, I mean, have your own independent ideas, by all means. Okay, what else has he done? Just some other things that also haven't passed the House. Banning text messages while driving, a secondary offense, not a primary offense. So the cops have to stop you for something else, like brandishing a gun or something, you know, on the highway. Before the end, he was text messaging while he was holding the gun out the window. That's a trick. Anyway, that bill hasn't passed. Do you think maybe it should just text message in any way that makes it a primary offense? I wonder. I mean, it's so stupid to do that anyway. You're bound to not be able to concentrate. You've got your eyes on your little buttons there, which are hard enough to press. Let me tell you, I've had several different phones with different size buttons. They're all too small. You got to stare at that with two eyes and two thumbs. And I know, I saw a BlackBerry guy once, a guy that had a BlackBerry phone, and he was doing it with one thumb.
Was he?
While he was driving.
Yeah. Oh, shaving with the other hand?
Yeah, right. Or brandishing the gun.
Brandishing. He spelled all the words wrong, though.
Yeah. Let's see, another Polidori-supported legislation here, allowing local governments to sue companies that don't fulfill their contracts. You know, I was wondering about that. Isn't the city of Dearborn doing that with Burton Katzman already?
Exactly what they did.
Why do we need this other law, Gino? What kind of thing is this? I mean, we're already doing it, but oh well. And then, striking right here at Henry Ford, granting a liquor license for Henry Ford Community College's culinary school, our hospitality education people, so they can do more than four banquets a year. And believe me, folks, I had to get a beer wine license here for WHFR back in 97 and again in 99. And the paperwork required, the number of times I had to visit our local police department and had to go to insurance agency to get a performance bond, and then the time it took to send this document to Lansing, and once I even had to drive to Lansing just to sell some beer and wine for us. And the college is limited to four events a year, you know, four special banquets where they would like to offer people the chance for at least beer and wine, if not hard liquor. And so I hope that passes. Many four-year schools I know have this provision. So that would be cool. Thank you, Gino. You know, not that I believe in alcohol is essential at fancy banquets, but a lot of people do. And if they're going to give us a couple $1,000 to eat a meal here to help raise money for scholarships, and let them drink. That's what I say, if they want to. Doesn't mean they have to, but okay. Maybe it's a cash bar. What the heck, you know. Doesn't have to be free booze. Certainly not. Allowing funeral homes to release unclaimed cremations of veterans to veterans organizations. So if those poor, this is so sad, if the poor veterans who have died for our country have no family to give them a proper burial, then at least allow the veterans organizations to do something. Why isn't that passed?
Where are the remains right now?
Interesting question. Are they sitting at a funeral home somewhere?
Yeah.
Or in Wayne County somewhere, in a basement somewhere?
Yeah.
I mean, or do they just sort of toss them in the water supply or in the trash? I mean, our veterans, I mean, anybody's life is important, I think. I don't care if they're homeless people or, I'm sorry, you're putting homeless in the same category as a soldier that died for our country. They're all people. They were all people originally. I feel sorry for all of them. If somebody doesn't want to, you know, honor their existence or their effort to try to be a good person. Maybe for some people it only lasted 5 minutes, but right after they were born, they did a crime, you know. I don't know, but that's just so sad. Let's see, another one here. Requiring that financial institutions inform account holders of their rights regarding joint accounts.
Interesting.
Wow. That there's something special there about joint accounts. I know you can get in a lot of trouble. People say, oh, yeah, let's have a joint account. Oh, what about divorce? Oh, my God, what a mess. So there's actually some interesting legal consequences of a joint account that you may not think of. And apparently nobody's telling people right. about those extra things, or it's in some sort of small print, but it sounds like they're not even trying to tell them about that. So, yeah, why not? What the heck? There's a lot of that little picky, nitpicky little laws that our legislators do, and it's all kind of important. But hopefully you brought that to your attention. Okay, big summary here, big finish before we go to the Blues show. The Arab American Film Festival going on at the National Arab American Museum tonight and tomorrow night. They're still having movies. It's the 2009 Arab Film Festival right here in Dearborn. And thought-provoking selections of feature-length and short films made by Arabs and Arab Americans. It's the fifth year doing this, and believe me, as a film teacher, folks, I gotta tell you, they pick really good, high-quality films. You may have never heard the names. You may say, oh, it's all going to be in Arabic. Well, it'll be subtitled, even if it is. Okay, so whether you're an Arab American or anybody else, you can get tickets over there. Let's see, starting times. Oh, of course it doesn't say. But tonight and probably through tomorrow and Sunday, too, and give them a call. The Arab American National Museum right here in Dearborn. Trust me, as a film teacher for 40 years here at Henry Ford Community College, great classic artistic films, and you'll find something that you'll be very proud that you saw. And you can call Arab American National Museum or go to their website, whatever it is, they don't say here in the article. 313-582-2266. 582-2266 for further information about the Arab Film Festival, as they're calling it. That's going to be this weekend, tonight, and continuing on through the weekend, probably even during the days, as well as at night. You can get discount tickets or single tickets or blah, blah, blah. The Detroit Symphony has got a month of holiday classics, downtown Detroit. Go check that out. What else here? I wanted to talk about Greenfield Village.
That's right.
They're doing stuff. I don't know. Is it this weekend? Where the heck is that story? Dennis,
I thought that was ongoing, what you were looking at, through the holidays.
I think it's Friday nights, folks, at
the Village?
Greenfield Village, Henry Ford Museum. I think it's Friday nights through this month, big